Is he going to do tabernacle or is that?
Me and my wife and kind of. Just let me call you because I don't know.
That's a roll sheet today. I haven't got my roll sheet back from the office yet, so so for today, just sign in your name, last name first. Will be tradition. We'll get it marked in. Those that are taking this class on tape, if you're missed a session, from here on out, it's going to be very important that you not only hear the tape but get the board work, because we're doing a lot of diagramming and so forth. And so make sure you get in touch with another student that's been here and took the notes in the class. If you've got his notes and you listen to the tape, you'll be able to get everything down. It's really important because, especially with this symbolic logic, we're going to be doing things with a lot of charts and diagrams, and there's no way to really tell you how to, or verbally tell you over the tape how this thing is drawn. Okay, we were talking last time about various logical functions in symbolic logic. And we laid the foundation. We looked at the truth table, for example, for the conjunction, and the truth table for the negation was the thing we left off with last time. Yes. Yes.
Just for the benefit of my notes and seeing the direction we're going.
Yes.
The way I understand it, this is all a list of types of compound statements.
Right.
The conjunction first, and then the negation second.
Right. That's basically it. Now, the negation may not necessarily be a compound statement. That one was kind of thrown in because that's going to be an element that's a part of other compound statements. Yeah. But what we're basically trying to do is find the symbolic language for statements in a regular language that are compound statements and how we put them together. And first, we're going to be dealing with define some basic symbols. There's not very many of these. We've just got a few more to define. And then we're going to combine those symbols into longer statements and show you how you can make big, long, huge statements out of these very simple symbols that we've used. And that they can have some you can understand what they're saying. And then work a truth table method first we're going to be looking at. And then we'll find a lot slicker and quicker and faster ways to do it later on. Okay, so that's basically what we're doing. Today I'm going to define the disjunction, that's the next one, and then we'll define the material implication also. And those are the next two symbols that are, the next two major symbols that are involved. And after that, we've got pretty much all the symbolism we're going to need. And then it's a matter of combining those things and looking into how we can arrange them and what kind of arguments we can develop with them and so forth. Okay, anyone else? All right. To recall, last time we defined just for review, we defined the pearl or the symbol for a negation this way. We defined it by a truth table in which we have only one variable now, P, and P can either be true or false. Those are the only two possibilities for P. It's like a coin, you flip it, it's either heads or tails. And not P, pearl P, we'll usually say not P is what we normally say. That's the negation of P, is simply the statement that if P is true, then not P is going to be false. Because not P is just the negation of P. And if I know P is a true statement, then to deny a true statement means you're making a false statement. And vice versa, if P is a false statement, then to deny that false statement is making a true statement because you're truly stating that the statement is false. Okay, so that becomes a true statement. And these are, you know, black and white type statements. We're not, in logic, you're dealing with with absolute statements when you're formulating arguments. If you're going to make a non-absolute statement, then you're getting into a different kind of reasoning, and we'll talk about that later. So for deductive reasoning, statements are either true or false, always. Okay. So this is the definition of the truth table for not P. All it simply does is negate the truth table. It just reverses the truth table. What was true here is false here, vice versa. Okay. Now, getting back to another compound statement, the next type of compound statement that we want to discuss is what's called the disjunction. Now, remember we had the conjunction before. Conjunction was P dot Q, P and Q. Disjunction is a little bit different. It's sometimes called alternation, too. You might see that term in some books. Now, in English language, the disjunction is formed by inserting the word or between the two components. And so you have a statement of two components with the word or in between, this or this. Now, the two statements are called disjuncts, just like the conjunct. They're the portions that are joined. So you have two disjuncts connected by or. That's the whole thing called a disjunction. Now, we do have a bit of an ambiguity here because in English, the word or can be used either inclusively or exclusively. And let me illustrate. In English, when I say this or this, I may mean this or this, but not both, you know, one or the other. Either get on this side of the line or the other. Or I may use the word or in the sense of, in an inclusive sense, meaning one or the other or both. And there's sometimes an ambiguity as far as what you really mean. One or the other, but not both, that's the exclusive sense, meaning that it's one or the other, but not both of them. It's exclusively one or the other. And that's what's called the exclusive sense of the word or. Or there's an inclusive sense, which means one or the other or both. In other words, one or the other is true, both may be true, but I know at least one of them is true. See, one or the other is true. And I may be implying by my statement that I'd be happy if both were true, but I know one of them is. And in English, we don't always discern. You can usually tell from the context what's meant, but the word or itself is used both ways. We can't afford that in logic. We can't afford ambiguity. So we're going to define it one way in logic and stick to that. Now, the other way can be derived from logical symbols, as you'll see, too. We've got ways of deriving of both of them, but we want to make sure we make a distinction. So we're going to define this symbol of V. It just looks like a V. A little sharper V. It's called a V. That is the symbol for a disjunction. And we are going to use it in the inclusive idea, inclusive or, meaning one or the other or both. When you see that symbol V in a logical language, it means one or the other or both. Be one or the other or both. That's the meaning of that symbol. And I'll show you by the truth table exactly what we're getting at. Now, the exclusive idea of one or the other but not both can be derived using this, using some of the symbols that we've already used. We can get at that. So don't worry about that right now. I'll show you today how we can arrive at that same statement. It's a little bit more complex. But see, it doesn't matter. Whichever one you decide, they just happen to decide to make it this way. And if they decided to make it the other way, then you could get this one by expressing in terms of the other one. So it's just a matter of convention which way you decided to go. Okay, so this means the inclusive or, one or the other or both. That's what the symbol V means. And let's make a truth table defining this. A truth table that defines this symbol, let's just use P or Q here for a model, would be this. Again, we've got two variables now, P and Q, so we make our truth table to give all the different possibilities of combining truth values of those two. So, by convention, we've decided that when you've got two variables, the first variable, you're going to put 1, 0, 1, 0, the second one, 1, 1, 0, 0. And that you just do automatically. It's simply a matter of getting all the various possibilities, 1, 1, 1, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0. See? Just trying to get all the combinations. And it's a convenient way to remember how to do it without starting to go through the mathematical formula for combinations. If you get seven variables, you're not going to want to have to try to figure out how am I going to get all those things arranged. But this nice mechanical system will work. The first
first, this column, they go 1010, this one 1100, 1100, 1100, third one 111000, the three ones, 30s, and then 41s and 40s, you can go up at it for an item if you want to do it that way. And that way you'll be guaranteed of getting all the different possible combinations. Now the reasoning behind that is a little bit more exotic than we've got the time and, you know, to delve into. I think intuitively you can see that this is the way you are going to get the different combinations this way. And so it's convenient. Okay. Now, P or Q, PVQ here, the disjunction, is defined this way. By the inclusive one or the other of both, what I'm saying is that this statement is going to be true if P is true or Q is true or if both are true. The statement is going to be true. In other words, going back to our truth table, my first combination, P is true and Q is true, so this statement, P or Q, is going to be what? True, right. Because both are true. So and all I need is one or the other of both to make it true. So in this case, I've got both. Obviously, it's true. Now, in this case, P is true, Q is false. It still makes it true because I had one of them, you know, one or the other or both. I've got P. P is true, therefore the whole statement, P or Q, is true. If I say this is true or this is true, my statement is true if one or the other or both of those parts of the statement is true. Because all I'm asserting is that one or the other or both is true. Okay. Now, P is false, but Q is true. What does that make our true? And they're both false. What does that make? False, right. So that's the truth table to define the disjunction. If P is true, Q is true, it's true. One or the other, you see, is true. It's true. So you've got 1110. The only place it's false is if both elements are false. Then my statement that P or Q is true is a lie because neither one of them is true. But that statement can be made true if either one of those is true. That's all I need. Okay? Questions on this? Okay, there's nothing really complex about these as you take it step by step. And you'll see what we're getting at. It may be, the only thing that may be strange to you is you're wondering, what are you really trying to get at here? And why do all this? See, but you'll find that this is going to save a lot of work and really streamline things. And it really forces us to examine the actual relationship between statements independent of what the statements are. See, we don't know what P and Q are here. We don't know what statements they are. But it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. It doesn't make any difference, in fact. P and Q, for any statements P and Q, their disjunction is defined logically by this truth table. It doesn't matter what P and Q are. You can substitute any statements you want in P and Q, and you'll still end up with the same thing. And of course, statements P and Q may be true or false, but they'll fit this table. If both of you, if the thing that you plugged in there was such that both P and Q were false, then the whole statement would be false according to this truth table. See? So this just gives you the mechanics for evaluating the truth of any given statement of this particular form. If you know the truth value of the components, you can figure the truth value of the total statement. And that's what we're really trying to learn how to do here. But it really depends. There's no way you can use logic to determine the truth value of your premises. As I said before, logic starts with the premises. And you've got to know whether the premises are true or false in order to plug it into the logical system. So we're not here to discover whether the premises are true or false, but knowing whether the premises are true or false will be able to enable us to predict through the rules whether the conclusion is true or false. That's what logic's all about. Okay, before we go further, we're going to add another symbol pretty soon. But before we do that, we have to introduce another area, and that's punctuation. We have to discuss punctuation in logical statements. And the reason for that is that it can get very confusing unless you punctuate and isolate the particular statements that you're dealing with and showing the relationship between each other. The best way to illustrate this is to use, first of all, our English language, and then we'll use some mathematics, and then you'll see how it applies here. Now, we use punctuation marks in English and in other languages to remove ambiguities, to enable us to know what part of a sentence is functioning a certain way, and so forth. And especially complicated and compound statements need punctuation in order to split them up and enable you to see what applies to what. And without our variety of punctuation marks, many sentences would be very ambiguous. For example, let me put this sentence on the board, and you'll see what I mean. Okay.
Now, we use punctuation marks in English and in other languages to remove ambiguities, to enable us to know what part of a sentence is functioning in a certain way and so forth. And especially complicated and compound statements need punctuation in order to split them up and enable you to see what applies to what. And without our variety of punctuation marks, many sentences would be very ambiguous. For example, let me put this sentence on the board, and you'll see what I mean. Okay. Okay. The captain says the mate is a fool. Now that sentence can be read two completely different ways, depending on how you punctuate it. I could say the captain, comma, says that the mate is a fool. Says the mate is a fool. I could say the captain says the mate is a fool. Or I could say the captain says the mate is a fool. See? And the thing that makes a difference, the words haven't changed, but my punctuation can change completely the sense in which that sentence is to be understood. The captain says the mate is a fool is different than saying the captain says the mate is a fool. But it's punctuation that's made the only difference between those. And the understanding has completely changed depending on the punctuation. Now, that happens in language, and it also happens in mathematics. Let me give you an example. Suppose I give you this problem to do. Okay? Somebody figure that out. What's the answer?
How many do you see?
Okay. You can get two different answers to this depending on how you interpret the punctuation. See, that's an improper problem right there because I haven't given you the punctuation that will enable you to determine the answer. Let me illustrate. If I say 5 plus 4 times 8, I'm going to have 37. But if I say 5 plus 4 times 8 is 72. So I get a different answer to the same problem depending on how I punctuate. So the punctuation is significant. It's not a matter of just take your pick as to how you want to do it. In what order, you'll still get the same answer. No, you'll get a completely different answer to this problem depending on how you punctuate the terms. And we use parentheses in mathematics to indicate that this is one term in relationship to this operator. This operator plus is the conjunction, you might say, of this number and whatever's in this parenthesis. And if I do it this way, I've got the multiplying operator that is multiplying whatever is in this parenthesis, and I have to perform the operation in here first, find out what that is. Once I find that, then I multiply that by 8. So the punctuation is very significant here. It's very important as to what kind of an answer I get. And the same is true in logic. We need to also in logic, since we've invented a few operators here. We've invented the conjunction, we've talked about the negation, we've talked about the disjunction, and those operators need to be operating on other terms, and sometimes the terms are complex themselves. And so we've got to be able to punctuate in such a way that there's no ambiguity as to what that operator applies to, what term that thing is working on, you might say. And so it's very much the same as what we have in a mathematical situation. And that brings up, let's translate this into symbolic logic form again and see what we mean there about punctuation. Let's suppose that I've got this expression, P.Q.VR. Okay, as stated, that is an ambiguous expression because I could be wanting here the conjunction between P and the disjunction between Q and R, or I may be asking for the disjunction between R and the conjunction of P and Q. And I don't know for sure which one it is. And you'll see as we work this out that the truth value will be dependent upon how I punctuate this. If I punctuate it one way, I'll get a different truth value than if I punctuate it another way. And so we do the same thing in logic, in symbolic logic, that we do in mathematics. And that is use parentheses to indicate what terms are being applied to by the operator. For example, if I take these three terms, just put it down twice. If I put the parentheses here, I've got one statement, and if I put the parentheses here, I've got another statement, just like in mathematics. Parentheses here means that I perform this operation first, and I decide what the conjunction between P and Q is, and then having arrived at that, I make a disjunction between that and R. This parenthesis system means that I first perform the operation of a disjunction between Q and R, and then conjoin that with P. Just like we did with the mathematical terms there, with addition and multiplication. And now this removes the ambiguity. Now I know exactly what I'm dealing with, and I can calculate it accordingly. Now, just as in mathematics, in math, you use these kind of parentheses for small expressions, and then if you get a bigger one, you'll use brackets. Say you got something like this, you'll use brackets around the whole thing. And then if you get something even bigger than that, you'll use braces around that, if you've got a bunch of other terms. Okay, so that's basically what we'll do. And if you get bigger terms than that, you probably better forget it anyway. Usually you're not going to get problems that complex. Okay, but if you did, you could maybe make bigger braces or fits and new kinds of symbols or something like that. But by convention, we start with these parentheses and the brackets and the braces. That's the same thing we do in mathematics. And you'll see how we work those things out before too long. Also, by convention, the curl, which is the negation, is understood to apply to the smallest statement that the punctuation permits. It applies to the smallest statement that the punctuation permits. So, for example, if I've got this, not P or Q, I just got that expression, the negation applies just to the P. Doesn't apply to the Q, just applies to the P. But if I wanted to negate the whole thing, what I would do is go not P or Q. That means it's the negation of this whole statement. Everything is in the brackets, as parentheses here. And if I wanted to negate something that was in these braces, brackets, for example, I'd put the not up here. But see, that this negation will apply to the smallest expression which it can apply to by the rules. In this case, if it's right outside the bracket, it's got to apply to everything in the bracket. In this case, since it's just right next to the symbol and there's no parentheses or anything else around it, it applies only to the symbol, just to that, not to the rest. And in this case, it applies to everything inside that parenthesis. So that's really natural. There's nothing mysterious about it. It's just that, just remember that the negation applies to the smallest unit it can apply to according to the rules. So don't try to apply your negation to the whole thing just because it sits out here in front of it. It applies just to the smallest unit it can apply to, wherever Q. Okay. Now, any questions on that? Let me show you what happens to this truth value of these two expressions to show you that it is significant and important to make this distinction and use parentheses. Let's take this, P dot Q or R, and let's take it the two different ways that we are programming it here. And let's suppose that we'll just pick some truth values for P, Q, and R just to see, plug them in and show you that there will be a difference. Depending on, we'll show you how to do this whole thing later on, but this will be a kind of quick method. Let's suppose that P is false and Q is true and R is true. See? And this would be one of the combinations in the truth table that you would make for this. All you got to do is find one where you get a difference to show straight up. But let's just suppose that P is a false statement, Q is a true statement, and R is a true statement. And let's see how that affects this statement. Now, if P is false, we'll put a zero under here, and Q is true, we know, and R is true. Okay. Now, let's look at P dot Q. Remember from your truth table, if the conjunction is true only if both parts are true. So my statement P dot Q, if P is false and Q is true, that whole statement is what?
False.
And the best way to do this is to put a zero under this dot in the next column there, which means that this dot, the thing this dot operates on is a false statement. The whole statement now is false. P dot Q is a false statement. P is false, Q is true, makes the whole statement false. Okay, now over here I still got a 1, I still got a true down here. Now what I want to do is ask this question. I've got the operator OR here. I've got something on this side now that's a false statement, and something on this side that's a true statement. And my disjunction tells me that the total statement now is going to be what?
True.
Right. And here again, we'll put the 1 down underneath this C here. See, the best way to operate in these things, and we'll work some more difficult ones in a minute, but the best way to operate is to do things inside the parentheses first, you know, work from the smallest out, and then begin to work toward your total problem. And the total problem is really a disjunction between this expression and this expression. And I had to work out what this expression was first, and then find out how it related to this one. You'd really get confused if you tried to do it from the outside in. What works? You do it from the inside out. The way the Lord works on us, from the inside out. Okay, so my total statement here is a true statement with these values. If I know that P is false, but Q is true and R is true, then the total statement here becomes a true statement. Now let's use the same values here that we had here and punctuate this differently. And let's see what happens. Instead of P dot Q or R this way, we'll go P dot Q or R. That's just taking the same expressions now, but punctuating them differently, and you'll see what happens. Now again, let's use the same values for this argument. P is false, Q is true, R is true. Okay, now let's work within our parentheses. We've got Q or R, disjunction between Q or R. Both are true, so the disjunction is going to be what?
True.
One or the other or both is true, the disjunction is true. And I still got a false statement over here. Now what I'm doing is conjoining a false statement, P, with a true statement, this disjunction, and that conjunction is going to be what?
False.
Remember, because a conjunction is true only if both parts of it are true. And now I've got a false statement, and over here I've got a true statement. I came up true here and I came up false here with the same set of truth values, but because my punctuation was different, I was making a different statement. So these are two different logical statements. Even though the same symbols are there and the same operators are there, the punctuation has made them into completely different statements. Just like our mathematical formula I gave you earlier came up with two completely different numbers, depending on what order you applied the operators into, what terms you applied them. And so this is a very important point. That's why we illustrate this example, just to show you that it does make a difference. Now, with some sets of values, if I pick certain sets of values, I might come out with the same answer for both of these. I just happen to pick some sets of values that would show the difference between these. But when you construct a complete truth table for this expression and this expression, you'll see that they do not say the same thing. Some places they may come up with the same answer, but other places they won't. They're different logical statements. Any questions, comments on this before we move on? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, Greg?
Any particular reason why they're hung on P?
I don't really know.
Or?
I don't know. It may have been that they started with P for proposition, and then they just went on, you know, from there. I don't know. It's traditional, you know, traditional logic. You could use alpha, beta, gamma. You could use any letters that you want in the alphabet. You know, that expression, watch your P's and Q's, and that kind of thing comes from this symbolic logic. And I don't know. I really don't know why that was chosen. The only thing I could think of is just that P stands for proposition, and it starts from there. Maybe they didn't want to use A, B's, and C's because it looked too much out like algebra, and they didn't want to do that. So they want to have a more sophisticated system.
Another example of that need for punctuation is Jesus on the cross with the thief. He says, "Verily I say to thee,
yes,
this day thou shalt be with me in paradise. Verily I say to thee, this day, comma,
yes,
thou shalt be with me."
Right, and there's variations even in the manuscripts as far as where the punctuation should go, because, of course, in the Greek manuscripts there was no punctuation, and you have to, you know, it means a different thing either way. Either in the first sense, if I say, this day thou shalt be with me in paradise, he's giving him a time element for when he's going to be in paradise. If you take it the other way, he's just making the statement that day, and he's not necessarily implying that he's going to be in paradise that day, but he will be with him in paradise. So it doesn't make a lot of difference. And sometimes we'll have to admit that dealing with a manuscript, for example, we may not be able to resolve the different possibilities, but recognize there may be a couple of possibilities here, and leave it at that until we get more information that will decide the issue. But it's really an important thing, and you can see logically it'll make a lot of difference in how you interpret a statement, depending on how the punctuation aligns. Okay. Now, any compound statement that's constructed from simple statements, like we've done here, we made a compound statement. We had simple statements, P, Q, and R, and we made a more compound statement with these various logical operators on them. Whenever you do that, the truth value of the compound statement is determined by the truth or falsehood of its component statements. So, and that's just what we've done here. This whole statement depends on the values of truth of the individual statements. And if I know the truth value of each individual statement, I can calculate or figure out the truth value of the whole statement. I can decide whether my whole statement is true or false if I know the value of each individual statement and if I know how to apply the rules. So that's just a simple principle then, that any compound statement's truth value is dependent upon the truth values of the individual statements that make it up. Yeah.
In Q or R, isn't it, or both, isn't that still left ambiguous?
Which part are you looking at here? What these expressions
I'm mean? Just thinking of that, the or statement.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's ambiguous in one sense that you do not know a priori ahead of time what the values of the different things are going to be, but the definition of the operator is not ambiguous. The operation that's being performed on these is not ambiguous. The operation is simply that it just tells you that if this expression is true and this expression is true, then my statement is true. If this expression is true, then this one's false is still true. If this one, if one or the other of these is true or if both of them are true, then my operator tells me the whole statement is true. But if both of them are false, then it's false, you see. And really, the best way to think of it is not so much in terms of the English language, one or the other or both, but think of it in terms of that truth table. That's what really what the definition of this operator is. The truth table is the definition. And the truth table just tells you that when you plug in certain values of the initial statement, that is going to be the value, truth value of the resultant statement. And that's the way to think of it. Think of it in terms of a real cold, mathematical, unemotional, operator. And that's really what we're trying to arrive at for the time here, is pure logic, independent of any feelings we might have about it. So, mathematically speaking, as it were, or logically speaking, there's no real ambiguity there. The ambiguity comes from our not knowing necessarily what the initial truth values are. But that's the ambiguity you're always going to have. And once you know what the truth values are, then it'll crank out the answer and there'll be no question about it.
So we're just thinking of function right now.
Right, yeah. We're thinking of, think of these in the same way you think of pluses, minuses, division signs, and so forth in mathematics. What they do is that they're a symbol that represents a certain kind of operation that's done, or a certain kind of expression of terms or relationship between the terms. And this symbol indicates that the two terms that span on either side are such that this will tell you that the whole statement is going to be true if both terms are true, or if one or the other of them is true, but it will be false if both of them are false. That's what that symbol tells you. It's a little bit strange when you get used to any new kind of language, but once we start working with these symbols and doing more complex problems with them, you're going to find it's going to be more natural to you. It's just, I realize the problem when you see a bunch of new things to start with, until you know how they actually work, and until we can relate them to real problems in real life situations, it seems a little strange. But part of the value of this is to arrive at a system that is quite mechanical. And in this case, mechanical system is really of value to us, because what we're trying to do is get our emotions unhooked and get to a system that we can use to crank out the answer. And then when you get it, you may be surprised at it, but it's the logic of the thing, and it's completely independent of how you feel. That's what we're really trying to arrive at. Now, if we know the truth values of the component statements, we can calculate the truth value of the total expression. And when you work such a problem, like in mathematics, always begin with the innermost components and work outward. So you look, find out where all your parentheses are and so forth, and work out everything in the parentheses, work out all the complex terms within the parentheses before you start tackling the relationships between the symbols in between the parentheses, as it were. And let's just consider another example here. This one's a little bit more complex than the one that I put on the board here. We'll use A's and B's on this one. There's some variety. Let's suppose that A and B are true, and that X and Y are false. Suppose we know that. And let's consider this expression. Dot A dot X and Y or dot B. Okay. Now that's a fairly complex expression. There are worse ones, but this is more complex than what we were dealing with. Now, we know that A and B are true statements and X and Y are false statements. We're given that to start with. So, and the only terms we've got in here are the A, X, Y, and B. So, theoretically, we can determine whether this whole statement is true or false now that we know the individual values that are involved. And how do we proceed in that? Just like I did before. Right underneath the A, we know that A is true, so we'll put a 1 for true. We know that X is false, so we'll put a 0 there. Y is false, so we'll put a 0 there. And B is true, so we'll put a 1 there. Okay, now my next step is to work out the truth values of the things in the parentheses. But notice over here I've got a not B. I've got an operator on part of this in here, so that's the thing I should really do first, is figure that out. And so, one easy, to keep from getting confused, let's go over here. This not B, if B is true, then not B is what? False. Okay. So right under the not, I'll put the symbol 0. And this one I'll just bring down, and bring this one down, and bring this one down, so I'm not working on this level. It's better than to try to leave that up there and then you get confused on what line you're on. Just to keep one operation per step, and you'll be a lot safer as far as reducing everything. So all I've done in this step is crank the fact that this is not B into the equation, and now I've arrived at this. Okay, now let's work on the things in the parentheses. In this case, I've got A dot X, and A I know is true, and X is false. And so the whole statement, the conjunction between a true statement and a false statement is going to be what? False. So I'll put the 0 under the dot here just so that I know that this false statement applies to this operation here. Okay, and then over here, now what I've got, now that I figured my not be in, what I've got is a statement that's false, Y, and disjunction between a false statement and a false statement, and that's going to be what? False, remember? Because the disjunction is false if both elements are false. If either one of them were true, I'd have true here, or both were true. But since they're both false, that's what I got there. And I put that also under this B, so I know where I'm at. Okay. Now, the next thing I naturally want to go for is this, but notice that I've got a negation on this term. So, and remember that the negation applies to the smallest term that it can apply to by the rules, and that would be this whole parenthesis. And so, what I've already found out what the truth value of the stuff in the parentheses was, it's false. If I negate that, what do I get? True. So I'll put the 1 out here under this. And now what I've got is this whole term is a true statement now. The negation of the false statement side, this whole term here is a true statement. And I've got that conjoined to a statement over here. I'll just bring this down one because I performed a step over here. So I've got the conjunction between a true statement here and a false statement. And what's that going to be? False. Right. Conjunction is true only if both parts are true, according to the truth table. Now, I've got this whole thing in brackets with a negation outside here. So that's the last thing I've got to do. The statement inside was false. The negation of the false statement becomes true. So I put my 1 out here, and that's the total value of the truth value of the whole statement. The statement is true given these values. Put in. Yes?
I think I got lost in that second step. Clarify
it up, A and X. Right. I know from the beginning, because of what I've been told here, that A and X, A is true and X is false. So that's why I put the 1 and the 0 here. The only reason I brought them down one more step is because I did something over on this side, and I didn't want to get confused and get a bunch of steps written down here, and this one kind of retarded back there. It just helps you keep straight what you're doing. You don't have to do that. You don't have to just repeat it. But it just makes it easier to keep things straight. We're going to abandon this system for another one a little bit later on, but in the meantime, it just keeps straight. All I did in the second step was I cranked in this negation into this because it was inside the parentheses, and I needed to, if I know that B is true, then not B is going to be a false statement, and that false statement is a disjunction with this. So I just performed that step. And then the next step I performed was to crank in both, to figure out what was in the parentheses in both cases here. So I got 0 and 0. But this one was negated, so I had to crank that in. And now I've got a true statement over here conjoined to a false statement over here, which results in this. And then that whole thing is negated.
Yeah. Is this the same thing as factoring?
Well, it's not the same thing, but you do follow some similar principles when you're doing factoring or when you're doing an algebra problem in which you've got parentheses and you're trying to figure things out. Once you plug your values in, there's a certain procedure, like I did with that problem I gave you before. There's a certain order in which you multiply things or add things in order to keep the terms right and keep your expressions, you know, proper. And usually you'll work one side of the equation at a time, for example. And remember, in mathematics, when you work one side of the equation, you just bring down the other side the same as it was before, and you haven't done anything with it yet. And you keep working on things one step at a time. If you don't do that, then if you make an error someplace, it's awful hard to find out where it is. See, if you do all of this and work out your work, if you made a mistake, later on you can go back and check, oh, that's what I did. I forgot to put that negation in or something like that, and you can find where your mistake is. And, of course, since we're trying to be logical now, we want to be careful about every step. And the key to this isn't how fast you can do it, because you might do it real fast and make a mistake. The key is how accurate we're going to be and make sure we're including all the terms. And you see, this statement that I've given here represents a real statement. You can plug in any word, a sentence for each one of these things, and you can translate this whole thing into an actual statement in words. And it would be a pretty verbose statement, of course. But it could be done. You may want to do that on your own. Just invent any statements you want. Make up two true statements and make up two false statements, and then translate this into actual language. And how you would translate that, of course, is you'd use the word, when you saw this symbol, you'd use either Y or not B or both, you see. And if you saw this statement, you'd just say not, to make it real short, or it's not the case that, so forth, whatever the statement is. And here you'd have to use it's not the case that, and then word. See, the problem is that in the English language, it's hard to write parentheses in English language, in spoken language. So it takes some effort to do that. In Greek, it'd be easier because you could use Randall Sharpe's rule. But I won't confuse you with that now. I think David and some of the others will understand that. Randall Sharpe's rule is a way of writing parentheses around terms, in a sense. Because it'll tell you both these refer to one the same person, for example, or something like that. Well, if it were Greek, we'd have an easier time doing this. And then it's negating the whole statement on the front. So you start out, it's not the case that, it's not the case that this and this and so forth, and then just translate it all out. So you can see it becomes rather complex. And the value of this system is that we can take a complex statement and translate it into simpler language and then begin to use it and crank out the answers and then plug it back into language and we've got our logical problem solved. Yes?
How would you say the dot?
The dot would be said as and. Probably the simplest way is say and. Just use the word and for the dot. Use the word not for the curl and use the word either blank or both for this. And you'd be in good shape. Sometimes you have to, you know, work on it a little bit as far as the actual wording is sense. But if you use those simple, it may sound a little stilted, you know, but you could flower it up with a little bit more other terms. But the more you flower it up, the less likely somebody's going to understand what you're saying. Actually, the principles of a computer are based on the same type of logical thinking and plus or minus flip-flop circuits, you see. All we got is ones and zeros. And that's part of what the computer system is based on, base two system.
Maybe we could make one called the Urim
and Thummim. Right. Just crank in all our theology into the computer and figure it out. Well, it'll work if you program it right, you'll get the right answer, you see. A computer will do this kind of thing. But you don't get the benefit of it, you know, it's like the machine did it, and I'm not really sure, you know, personally that the machine is right and that kind of thing. It's good for us to be able, we're not going to try to handle things that are so complex. If they get too complex, we will use a computer. But for things that are of normal complexity, it's good for us to be able in our own minds to follow the steps and know what we're doing. I want to give you an assignment for next week. We've got enough time here. I just want to put this on the board. So take these things down. These are problems similar to what we've worked here, and you work them out just exactly the way I've worked that one on the board. So, and this will be due next time. You really won't take all that much time.
It's a lot of fun. Yes, that's right. Okay.
Okay. Okay, there's 10 of them here. Number one, not. Okay, first of all, I need to say A, B, C are true statements, and X, Y, and Z are false. So assume that for all of these problems, and the way you start is to crank in 1 for anything that's A, B, or C, and 0 for anything that's X, Y, or Z. Okay? So, first statement is not B and C. Not A or not B. Not Y or B. A or B. Conjunction B or B. Got B. One for anything that's A, B, or C, and zero for anything that's X, Y, or Z. Okay? So, first statement is not B and C. Not A or not B. Not Y or B. A or B. Conjunction B or B. What I want you to do is figure the total truth value of these statements. You'll end up with either true or false for all of these by cranking in the values and performing the operations according to the pattern that you use there. Okay, number six, not A dot not B dot not not X or not B. It's worse. Number seven. But none of these are going to be that much of a problem. You just take it. See, a big problem is just a whole lot of little problems. And if the little problems are simple, the big problem is just a matter of doing a lot of simple problems. You've got to, you know, just reason. Take it by C. Hey, this is a negation of the whole thing. Don't forget one of these little curls because they make all the difference. Okay? It's a matter of doing a lot of simple problems, you've got to, you know, just reason. Take it by C. Hey, this is a negation of the whole thing. Don't forget one of these little curls because they make all the difference. Okay? Thank you. I don't know how to do it.
You overloaded the computer?
So the point is, breaking this down into simpler steps, and the most complex problem is just the same thing we've done here. Plug in your values that you know to start with under each term, and then begin to perform the operation from the inside out in a progressive sequence, making sure that if you're not operating on a certain part, you just bring down the values so that you keep it the same all the way down, and you'll come out with the right answer. It's a lot easier than it looks on the surface. Once you get into doing it, it's a lot easier. In fact, all 10 of these should not take you... Let's see, I worked them out. When I did it, probably maybe 15 minutes, something like that. But I expect you to take longer than that. But it's just a matter of cranking in the values. It's just a matter of mechanics. You don't need to be smart. You just need to know how to write a 1 or a 0 and know the rule that we defined. Okay?
Mike,
yes.
What
was that?
Do you want to show our work?
Yes, by all means. In each problem, show your work. Show me all your 1s and 0s all the way down. That's the only way you're going to have, if you make a mistake, of knowing where it was. And we're going to correct these in class next time, and I'll go through each one of them for you, so that if you're making mistakes, we'll find out exactly where it is. As soon as you get those copied down, we'll go on with a few other things here. That'll be due next time. Does anybody have any questions about any of this in the actual operation? Just be a matter of being careful, not forgetting one of these little dots or one of these little curls, and working systematically, taking a piece at a time, not trying to handle the whole thing at once. Can't see very well, you may want to move over there, or after the bell rings, this one you couldn't see, you can just slip over there and take it down. Now, as a little side note before I get into another type of function, remember I told you that we defined our V a certain way, meaning the inclusive sense of or, but there is a way to get the exclusive sense of or using the symbols that we've used. And the expression is a little bit lengthy, but it will result in exactly what we want. You see, the exclusive sense of or would be stating this or this, but not both. See, P or Q, but not both. It would be a false statement if they're both true, but a true statement if one or the other is true. So the exclusive sense of or would be P or Q, but not both. Now, there's a way to define that. In our symbolic language, P or Q, but not both, can be expressed this way. And not P and Q. Now that may not appear immediately obvious to you, but we'll work out the truth table for this, and you'll see that in fact it is. That this. You see, what we want is a truth function such that the truth value, what we want is this. We want to have, if we've got P and Q like this, we want our expression X here to give us this kind of a truth table. We want, if P is true and Q is true, then we want this thing to be false, because we want one or the other, but not both. And if P is true and Q is false, then it'll be true. If P is false and Q is true, then it'll be true. And if they're both false, it'll be false. So that's the kind of a truth table we want for our expression X. Let's see if this expression does the job. Okay, let's take the truth values of the first set of truth values. What I want is, if I use these two truth values, I should get a false statement over here. So let's plug them in. If P and Q are both true, put a 1 there, a 1 there, 1 there, and a 1 there. Okay, P or Q, that expression, if they're both true, is going to be what? True. Okay, now over here, P dot Q, if they're both true, is also going to be true. But this negation here of this term is going to be what? False, right? A true statement negated is false. So I'll bring this 1 down over here. Now I've got a 1 on this side, and a dot, and a 0 on this side, which ends up with a 0. Conjunction between a true and a false statement is false. So lo and behold, with the values 1 and 1, I do come up with, for this expression, I do come up with a 0 over here. If both P is true and Q is true, then this whole expression becomes false, and that's just what I wanted. Okay? Now, let's take the second line in our truth value. If P is true, but Q is false, then what do I get? Now, what I want is to get a true here. Let's see if we do. Okay? P or Q is false now, and P is true. We've got a 1-0 over here. Okay, P or Q, that's still going to be true by the truth table. P dot Q, however, is going to be false. So not P dot Q is going to be what?
True.
I'll bring this value down. Now I've got a conjunction between a true statement here and a true statement here, which results in a true. So lo and behold, it works. Okay. Now let's try the next line. If P is false and Q is true, I'd like it still to be true. So let's see what happens. Now we've got P is 0 and Q is 1. P is 0, Q is 1. Okay, here we have a disjunction. One of them is true, so it becomes true. Here we have a conjunction. One of them is false, so that makes it false. But it's negated here, so we have a 1 here, a 1 here again, and the conjunction between two true statements is true, we still get a 1. Now, if both of them are false, what that works out to be? 0, 0, 0, 0. Okay, the disjunction is going to be false, because the disjunction is true only when one or the other or both are true, and neither are true is false. The conjunction is also going to be false, clearly, because both have to be true for that. And the negation of that is going to be a true statement. This brings down to a 0 statement. And the conjunction between a false and a true is still false, so we get a 0 there. So this expression does work, and it will give me exactly this truth value. And so P or Q dot not P and Q indeed gives me exactly that truth table. And that's what I was looking for. So this would be the exclusive OR. And that's how we define it in logical language, using this other symbol. Now, you could have actually gone in reverse, and you could have defined your V by this truth table, and then tried to figure out how you could get the inclusive sense of getting a 1 here also, using other expressions. You might even want to do that for exercise if you feel the inclination. But it really didn't matter which way we defined this. We could get the other one, you know, by combining other terms. It wouldn't necessarily be the same expression, but you could arrive at it that way. So we can do that, and we can get an exclusive OR if we want to. So if you're reading a statement, for example, in English that says this statement is true or this statement is true but not both, you can write it this way in symbolic logic, and you can translate that way. It takes a little bit more work than another statement might. But even in English, we have to make a longer statement if we want to get that idea out. Anyone have a question or comment on this? Yes?
I still can't see how you get the V to be exclusive when it's inclusive.
Okay, the V is inclusive. The V here is not exclusive. It's the whole expression that results in what we want for an exclusive sense. See, we've defined V as the inclusive sense. And what we're wanting to do is discover an expression now that will give us the exclusive sense. The expression is this total thing. It's not just this. This would be a different truth table if all I had was that. In fact, the truth table for P or Q is this. It's not this. But the P or Q plus this statement results in this truth table. And so this is not varying its function at all. This still has the function that it had before. But this total expression, now that I've conjoined it with something else that will modify things, that is what has resulted in this new truth table, which is the exclusive OR is this whole expression here. It's not just one symbol. It's the whole expression. So it takes you a lot more work to get that out of it. Okay? Is that our last cell? Okay, that's all the time for today. If you weren't able to get all that down, you might want to move over and make sure you get it accurately. If you miss a term or something there, it's going to affect your answer.